Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. This is Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green, and Dr. Debbie Green will be joined with Dr. Twin Green.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Soulful Solutions, and my name is Dr. Debbie Green. It's wonderful having you this morning. Before we get started, I want to ask you a question. How did you sleep last night? You know, is there anything bothering you? Well, I hope you actually woke up in peace. I hope you woke up in a good spirit, you know. I hope that things are working out for your good. I hope that everything that's in your life right now as I speak is changing for the better. Because sometimes we have so much going on and we become overwhelmed, overburdened, overstressed with everything. So just be mindful of this day. Choose a word, what you want to think you feel, whatever it is. I want to be peaceful today. I want to be in joy. I want to appreciate life. I want to enjoy life. And this day, just for this day, you do everything in your power to do so. We have a wonderful show this morning. I have a wonderful guest that's here, Dr. Green. You know, when I found out her last name was Green, I'm like, wow, I'm introducing myself. Her name is Dr. Twin Green. And she is so enlightened, and I just want her to be able to share some wonderful nuggets with you guys this morning. Our subject matter is youth under crisis. So we're going to be talking about mental illness when it comes to the youth, as well as emotional disorders, and also giving resources that you may need. If somebody's out there that needs some help, I actually left my email there. If you're under crisis and don't know what to do, if something is overwhelming to you with your child and you don't know where to turn, Well, this is your opportunity. This is your opportunity to receive the help that you need and know that you're not alone in this battle, because it takes community to raise a child. And it still stands for today. It takes a community to raise a child. So join in and sit tight and listen. You may learn a little something. Thank you.
Grand Rising. Yes.
Dang, how are you?
Oh, fantastic. Another fabulous rainy day here in Chicago.
I know, right? Yes. Yes, it is. It is a rainy day. It's a rainy day here on the outskirts of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it's raining all over, right?
It feels like it's raining all over the world.
All right, now. I love that, too. You look so cute today. Girl, you popping over there. You just glowing. Look at you. Absolutely. I was just letting our viewers and listeners know that, you know, we have a wonderful show lined up. And this particular topic, Naima, is such a overwhelming topic for a lot of people, you know, because I work up close and personal, I get the opportunity to see what happens in families' lives when it comes to their children.
Yeah.
And starting as early as 5 years old all the way to 17, crisis. I'm talking about
early.
Mental illness, suicidal attempts. Cutting is another thing as well. Self-infliction, self-harm, anxieties, depression, you know, behavior defiance. Oh, the list goes on and on. Psychosis, hearing voices, delusions, paranoia. The list goes on. I'll be sitting here saying this till tomorrow evening. That's just how in-depth it is with our children. And there's so many factors that play a role in all of those things I just said. Because guess what? None of our children are born like that.
No.
And I say our, which means because I look at children as my children. Even when I'm at the hospital, I don't look at them, oh, that's somebody else's child. No. For those 6 hours, 4 hours, 3 hours, that they're there, those are my children.
Yes.
You know, I am the overseer. Me and the staff, you know, the other therapists, we are there, you know, because, you know, again, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes, it does.
And I think we forgot that, Naima. I think some kind of way things really just, I mean, from over 30, 40 years ago, you know, it was so evident that, you know,
everybody participated.
Yeah, where we grew up at, right?
Yeah.
Where we grew up, you had the next door neighbor and the neighbor down the street, and you know, you had all of these people that watched that one child.
Yes, you always had eyes on you everywhere you went, and you knew it. You understood that everybody was watching you, and that was part of what made you make sure that you didn't do anything inappropriate, because someone was always watching, and all the adults talked to each other. So if it was necessary for your parents to be informed that you were misbehaving, your parents would get a phone call. So that was the kind of environment we grew up in, where everybody was connected and children felt the eyes of the community on them. And, you know, anybody who needed correction, you know, needed someone to say something to them, to remind them, you know, don't throw rocks at that car, you know, whatever thing you're doing
right.
That you shouldn't. You know, you'd hear somebody would open the door and holler out, and you knew that they were watching you and you better stop. You know, so it just, that was the best security we could have had, better than any policing system there is. It was those parents who watched, those parents who sat out on the porch and and observed the block and knew ever spoke to everybody who walked past. That was our security. And that
exactly.
And that was our safety because we
yes.
knew that people knew us. And so there was just – that was how we were protected and that was how we were guided. So there was a lot more emotional health in that kind of environment rather than a lot of these neighborhoods now where nobody knows anybody and nobody speaks to anybody, nobody trusts anybody. And a child can feel very much – alone in that kind of a situation where if something happened to them, nobody would care. Nobody would call their parents. So it's a reflective of a society that's become very disconnected. You know, in the name of us minding our own business, we really have dismantled the very fabric that held us together. And people think, well, how can we get back to the good old days? You really can't go back, but you have to go forward. You have to go forward and take the things that worked, discard the things that were not good, and see what it was that gave our children a better sense of emotional health. And I think one of the things that makes it difficult for us to form the kinds of trusting, cohesive neighborhoods we did have and we did grow up with, that era with the proliferation of drugs really
yes.
destroyed the fabric of our communities because people were not in their right minds.
Right,
so
right.
adults who should have been responsible parents became irresponsible parents, irresponsible adults behaving badly, doing inappropriate things, getting into theft to support a drug habit, getting into prostitution to support a drug habit. And if we can understand that substance abuse had a major impact on the dismantling of cultural values, then
yes.
rather than looking at people as criminal, we can understand that these were sick people who hadn't dealt with their emotional traumas in a healthy way, and so when they turned to the drugs, that was the most destructive way for them to handle their emotional pain.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, these factors that you spoke of, to be honest with you, they've been around for a very, very long time.
Yes.
And what has happened in the fabric of our families is that the responsibility and the obligation that they have to our children, the children that are a part of each family, the parent influencers have actually become so dysfunctional to the point where they then totally interrupt their children's lives. And they don't even realize it because I hear it every day. I hear that, you know, oh, mommy and daddy is getting a divorce, but nobody consulted me. You know what I'm saying? No one told me. Well, I just saw them stop talking from to each other, and I'm sitting there, and I blame myself, you know, not even knowing that that's not even the situation.
Yes. And it,
you know, again, they don't literally explain, you know, the ramifications of what happens when, again, the fabric of the family is torn to pieces by domestic violence, by drug activity, you know, by criminal activity. You know, by so many different things, by mental illness, you know, all of these things then play a big factor in why our children are affected today. So I see our guest is in the cube.
Great.
I want to introduce you, everyone that's listening and watching, to Dr. Twin Green of the Link and Option Center.
It is
ironic, but I'm sure there's much more to know and to explore when it comes to that, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's definitely a divine meeting connection.
Absolutely.
I'm absolutely sure of it. And again, thank you for joining us this morning. As I was telling our viewers and listeners, this is a topic that has been, I would say, overlooked, okay? I think that because of society today, we see it, but then we don't actually be a part of it like we should. So wonderful people like you and that actually have this subject matter and doing something with the subject matter. You're not just listening. You have become a pioneer in doing something, you know, to really eradicate and to help and heal, I say, a population that doesn't really have a voice. You know, they really don't.
Yeah.
So tell me a little.
Oh dear. I'm sorry. You got disconnected. Let me bring back in our sorry, we got disconnected for just one moment.
Yeah, I love what I do. I came out of corporate America to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not go back. Because it, you know, it's just so needed. And when you talk about, and your topic is just wonderful, you know, today when you talk about the youth and mental health and all of what the challenges that they're going through, they're in crisis.
Yes,
our youth are in crisis, and don't know if you know what is going to change that whole dynamic, but I know that. The pandemic pulled the covers back,
wow. You know,
babies and their entire families, you know, to have a four-year-old coming into the Lincoln Option Center for Services.
Wow.
That says something.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
What can a four-year-old have? You know, but every, you know, all youth are going through something, either is depression, anxiety, trauma, PTSD, you know, things that are going on in the community that they're experiencing, close up in their families, you know, family members dying, being murdered, you know, all of that, relationship separations. So then you have attachment, you know, disorders. You know, and it's just one thing after another compounding, and then social media doesn't help, you know, because they rely on that as their way of making friends, and then they start to make friends, and then they get challenged by what their interests are or how they look or how they speak or, you know, whatever, and then that sends them to another span. So it's just all over, you know. It's all over the place with our young people, but we cannot give up on them because they're our future. And
that's
like
right.
That seed, they're that seed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the senior generation now. So we've got to make sure that our young people are capable to be, you know, the leaders that we need them to be to take care of us.
Yes.
So we've got our work put out for us to make sure that they're well, and it's about being well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I see that up close and personal, just as you do, you know, at the hospital, because we service ages 11 through 17. So we also, you know, at the facility, we see it to where they come in with so many different types of situations. And, you know, what I'm noticing is, since the trend is actually changing with the domestic violence in the families, from verbal, sexual, you know, all types of dysfunctions, these are one of the counterparts, well, matter of fact, the main issues, the underlining issues that no one seems to really notice it become really a toxicity. And I'm also seeing incest is really on the rise since all of this has happened. Like you said, the cover's being pulled back,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people don't even realize that that is still a serious, you know, disruptor of the family system, the way it is, and it affects a child's life, and that never will you be the same. I know adults right now as the ages of 50 years old is still dealing with ancestral, you know, violations.
Right.
So it is a reality. It's a reality. So what I want to do is I want to know, like you said, you were in the corporate world, you know, because that's where I am now. I'm in the corporate world, and I know my fate is going to lead me into those same perimeters that you are now in, because that's what I was telling myself even last year. I'm like, Deb, okay, you know, put so much into this world of profit, you know, because that's what it is, and you don't see any change. You see them go in and they come right back. They go in, it's like a revolving door, and nothing's being done about it. So I'm like, and you know, I feel that passion, you know, that you felt when you stepped out of the box.
Yeah.
You know, and went into, so could you tell me what drove you to that point where you're like, okay, this is enough?
Well, it's my son. My son was experiencing at the age of 8 what I now know, did not know anything about mental health then, but what I know now, he was suffering from detachment disorder. When I divorced his father, he could not handle that. That separation from his father just tore him apart because he was in love with his father.
Yes.
I mean, that was a daddy's boy and still is at age 43. He is, I mean, loves his mom, you know, but he was so attached. You know, the boy said daddy before he said mom. I'm like, what is that? So, you know, yeah, and so I did not know what it was doing to him. You know, I was making sure we were okay, you know, all the way through, but, you know, he was internalizing this separation and could not understand it and did not want to.
Mm-hmm.
So he did everything within his power to be disruptive intentionally to make me send him to his father.
Wow.
And he had everything that he could, and any child could ever want or need, you know. But it wasn't that he was looking for. It wasn't the material things. It was not, you know, nice. None of that. He wanted to be with his father. And when he was no longer able to do that on a daily basis, that just rocked his world. And he did not know how to cope. And I didn't know what he was going through. I just knew he was just being a little menace to society. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Boy, you better go to school. You know, you just, I have to go to work, you know, and to afford all these luxuries that we have, you need to go to school so I can go to work. And he was like, no, you know, it was just so much of that. And it took me to actually did. I tried. I attempted one time, and it was the worst experience in the world. Worst experience in the world. And I said I would not subject my son to that, nor myself. It was disruptive to the process.
Now, why was it? Why was the counseling experience a negative thing? It was,
because the person that was sitting across from us.
She didn't know what she was doing.
It was male.
She didn't know what they were doing.
Uncaring. It was just, you know.
Wow.
No passion. No, you know, it didn't even need to be a counselor.
I've seen them before.
You know? The experience was quite disrespectful.
Wow.
And
wow.
I said then.
He was judgmental. That's what he was.
Yes, and probably did not have
any life experience, you know, maybe never had children of his own, or may even be going through a divorce himself and was kind of bitter and was passing that on to your situation.
Yes, absolutely, and all it took was just that one time for me and mine.
Wow.
But this is really
serious, and I'm going to tell you why. This is the reason... or one of the reasons why a lot of people don't go to therapy. Because, and I'm not saying we have all of these terrible licensed or non-licensed people that are out there, but if you don't have experience enough to know that you have a sensitive family in front of you and you can't transfer, all that kind of transfers of your judgment of what you think a family should be, No, it ain't about you. It is about the need of the family.
We came for help.
Exactly.
We needed some tools. And your job was to provide that at that time. If it was no more than an ear to listen.
Yes.
Absolutely. And then to give some resources passionately in a caring way. That means a whole lot right there, because if you are in this field, you have to care about someone else first.
You do.
Right.
And so then, you know, I'm listening to, you know, my son's friends. They all were going through the same, you know, situations, and I'm ear hustling, you know, as a mom should do. And I'm listening to them, and they're all, you know, saying the same thing about how they're missing their dads and I said, I've got to do something. I've got to create an environment where another mother or another father that is struggling with parenting their children, they can have somewhere to come, send their children, be safe, be cared for, be loved, and all those other things to make their social development, youth development, a positive experience. And take some of that stress off of them, that is what I'm going to do, and that's what I did. And that's why I did it. That's why I did it. I came out of corporate America making money, and I started this. But it's a passion. It's a ministry. I love it. You know, every day when I get up, it's like, okay, you know, it's like putting on the cape. I'm ready.
And we got callers on the switchboard that want to, I guess, ask some questions.
Okay.
And when we come back, Dr. Debbie, if you're ready to take some calls. So you listen to Dr. Debbie and Dr. Twin Green here on Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back after this brief message, so stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
To Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
All right. Welcome back to Soulful Solutions. My name is Dr. Debbie Green with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, our executive producer, and also our wonderful guest, Dr. Twin Green of Link and Option Center. Ooh, I say that in one breath, y'all. Let me get myself a hand, okay? Oh, wonderful. I'm just glad to have you beautiful ladies with me today. What I want to do is also touch on some of the factors, Dr. Green, that you notice, like some of the prioritized factors that you know that are current right now with, as far as the children are concerned, that's coming through your facility. Some of those factors, like you said, oh, we keep seeing this over and over and over again. Some of those factors. And I just want to see what the link up is, because I know I'm here in Georgia, and I want to know, I mean, because the state to state and all things are pretty much very similar, but then we also have some variation, and I'm just curious to find out what you see.
But when you say factors,
the things, for example, do you see more, when we deal with mental and emotional disorder, do you see more of the parental influencers? When I say parental, I'm talking about the biological, the nuclear families, that breakdown in the system that's causing, that's contributing to the emotional trauma of the child, or is it like more of when I say domestic violence or divorce or you know, death of family members, or, you know, those are just the factors that influence.
Okay. I believe it's more of the biological, because what they're getting sometimes in the household is not what is healthy for them.
Okay.
And when I say that, and I shouldn't say that it's not healthy for them, but it is contributing to the anxieties that they're going through. Young people now, the way that they communicate with their parents, or their parents are communicating with them when they are experiencing external challenges, school bullying, it could be a grief and loss situation. Maybe they've lost a family member. We don't know that they're internalizing that grief like we would. They don't know how to express that hurt. And then they will take and they will start to look at other ways to cope with their feelings, because we're not asking the child, really, how do you feel? Well, if something happens in the school, you know, maybe a school, one of their peers were hurt or got killed or something like that. I'm using that as an example. The school counselor, they'll say, well, we're bringing a school counselor. But that doesn't really, that's just that situation right there, not saying that it's not useful, but you have you say, well, go on and talk to someone, come and talk to us. But then when you go home, you don't have that support there, because family doesn't know how to sit around the table anymore and say, what's going on? How are you feeling today? What happened in your day?
Right.
We don't have that sit around the table kind of eat dinner together situations like we used to. And Naima, you mentioned that, you know, how the community came together when we were young and we came up in the same neighborhood.
Yes.
And that we had values, that value system was in the home. So you valued going to school, you valued education, you valued religion, whatever that was, you went to church. But now these children, they're looking more to external things to help them rather than in their home. And if the home isn't nurturing, if that home environment isn't nurturing, everything else takes, you know, they grasp to any and everything.
Yeah.
So I would say, yes, it is more the biological, because when parents are coming to me, bringing their children into the Lincoln Option Center, and I have about 200 youth. Of the 800 total people that are enrolled, and that's a single person. I think, you know, then you times that by four people in a family. I'm serving a lot of people.
Wow.
But if you look at those, you look at that number, and these kids are coming in pretty much with the same concerns. I'm depressed. I have anxiety about something. My mood is messed up. I'm using vapors. It's all these other things to help them cope, because they don't know how to deal with all this stuff that's going on in their little world. So, I think it's more of the home, because mom is coming or dad is coming, and the home is dysfunctional in a way.
Yes.
You know, the home now is expressing, you know, mom and dad, they have their own anxiety. So I'm stressed out about not having a job anymore. And, you know, I can't do this and other things. And now my world is turned upside down. And how can I nurture my child? So my child is missing out. So that's what I see more of.
You know, what I was going to ask, probably both of you all have seen this, since you mentioned the home life seems to be the problem. When I was teaching, and I taught elementary school and high school, and basically the school brought me in as kind of like the resident substitute. Whoever was missing, I filled in. I was teaching at the Betty Shabazz International Charter Schools, and so that means I'd been from kindergarten all the way up to, you know, high school classes, and I was seeing a pattern. Usually, like if a child was disruptive, I'd be the one to kind of pull them aside and find out what's going on so that the teacher could continue teaching while I dealt with whatever that child was going through. A lot of times, they were more, I would say 99% of the time, they were distressed about something that was happening at home. It was either a divorce, a domestic dispute. I think it was first grade class, and a child was having some difficulty. I pulled him aside, and I had him draw a picture. And first he started out drawing a nose, saying, well, my nose is stopped up. And then he started drawing the bedroom scene, and he started drawing the fighting scene between the parents. And he started drawing his sister and him hiding in the closet while his parents fought. And then he told me this whole story about, the mother and the father fighting because the boyfriend, and then children had to hide in the closet. I mean, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know. So by the time he had told me this whole story, what was happening, I could see he was living under constant stress and this conflict going on. Mm-hmm. And what do you do when you're 6 years old and in first grade, you know? And it's unfair, really, that teachers have to try to manage all of this emotional distress. And that's not their job. They're supposed to just teach, you know.
Yes.
But so
yes.
many children have, and it would happen time and time again. I'd have to pull a child aside, and it was some issue happening at home, parents' fault, you know. And then the older the children got, the more detailed their stories would be. One child, you know, one session we did, I said, well, raise your hand if you've ever witnessed an incident of violence. We were talking about what causes children to, you know, act out and bully and that kind of thing. And one of them was telling this story about how, you know, the father had stabbed the sister's boyfriend because, you know, he didn't like her going out with this guy, and so they had to call the police and arrest. And all this had just happened the day before. And I'm like, and you had to go to school like nothing happened? You know, I wonder how they're functioning. And then in high school, when I had the children write an assignment, write a letter to the person who's made you angriest. I would say out of five classes, you know, relatively about 100 students, I'd say about 75% were writing letters to their father, angry that the father had left the mother, and the anger that they were expressing. And I'm like, this family thing, for me, from what I've seen, it's at the root of everything.
It is. It is. And I'd like to share one more thing with you. I also do family reunification for one of the busiest courts in the Illinois, and that's 6th district. And these fathers are trying to establish their rights and have access with their children, and it's a battle. And what is happening with these children is that they knew their dads.
Yeah.
They knew their dads before that separation.
Yeah.
And now mom doesn't want the child to have anything to do with the father because the father doesn't want to have to do with you. He's moved on.
Over and over again.
And so should you have, and in some instances you have. But that child didn't get separated.
Yeah, they weren't divorced.
I've seen that all the time from the courts. And I'm sitting here and I'm watching these children, and they're trying to figure out, how do I not tell my mother that I love my father, I want to spend time with my father, without making my mother mad at me?
That's what I've seen. And
they're struggling, and it's causing them anxiety.
Yes. Because when we divorce, we want the child to take sides, and we want the child to take our side. And so we say all these bad things about the fathers so the child will see our point of view and take our side.
They're seeing it, and they're hearing it.
Yeah.
They're seeing it. Mm-hmm. These kids are hearing that, because everything that you say is within the children's ear, you know, ear reach, and they're ingesting this.
Yeah.
And it's not good. And I tell both my parents all the time, you know, you loved each other enough to have this child. Respect each other enough to co-parent. You don't have to love each other anymore or even be with each other anymore. But it's your responsibility as a parent to love that child, make sure that child has everything that they need until they become adults. And when they become adults, they will have those learned lessons from you that a family is supposed to be a family, and this is what a family does. And love is one of the root. You have to be able to do that. You have to know that you're being loved by both parents and not have to be in the middle mediating feelings.
Yeah.
I want to be free to do this because if I'm having some issues outside of you, the two of my parents, I can't cope with that external frustration, and I'm still frustrated with what's going on at home.
Yeah.
Too much. And so that brings a lot of anxiety and attachment disorder cases, you know, to me. And it's unfair that our children are subjected, you know, to all of that. And I feel really bad being a woman in a lot of these instances, you know, because we always want to say, oh, dad, be dad. All of them aren't.
You know, I would find most of them are.
That's true.
Most
They're
of men
not.
Feel very badly that,
anyway.
That there's so much hostility between them and the mother. And a lot of women, again, use the child support thing as a weapon. And so they have anger. And I was just seeing a pattern even among my male high school students, the anger that they felt in not being able to see their fathers and... You know, I had one student that was distraught because, you know, his mother's boyfriend had kicked him out of the house, and he trying to figure, okay, where am I going to go after school? And, you know,
yeah.
I'm homeless now. I mean, so they get caught in the crossfire of
yeah.
our adult conflicts. And I look at teachers at school having to deal with this, and they don't have the tools to deal with this. Most schools don't have counselors and therapists they can bring in.
No.
So... They just all, only tool they have is suspend a student when they disrupt.
Absolutely.
That's not
yeah.
helpful. And so I the frustration that I had was realizing our schools needed so much more mental health experts because most of the problems came down to family dysfunction and the child being helpless to do anything about it except express anger. And that's
absolutely.
What we were seeing.
Yeah. And you start acting out because you know, you don't know what else to do. You don't know how to do anything else.
Yeah. So we've got some callers on the line, you know, and it's no accident that I would say 70% of our listeners are male because I think they want to try to understand, what are these women doing? You know, how what is the solution? Because, you know, we find that a lot of men are kind of frustrated at the situation they've been put in. And,
and rightfully so.
And they don't get to see their children. So we're going to open the mics. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, that's right. Paul Rice says the child was not divorced. That's right. We make them feel like they were. He divorced us. We make the children feel like that, and because we want them to share our anger.
Yes.
That's what we do.
Yes.
So 312-450, your mic is open. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment for Dr. Green and Dr. Green.
God bless you, women of God. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Thank you, thank you. Bless all of you. I'm back. This is Sister Darva with Women Are Rising Ministries. I just want to say that God is doing some great things out here. The Holy Spirit is doing what it said it's going to do. 2023, it's going to be great for me and many others. So I just want to say that I am definitely working with our young people, the new AOL, the new advocate organizing leaders, those are young people ages 8 to 28. And I just wanted to jump in. I've been very busy, but I'm back. But God has me on an assignment that's so powerful that I have to stay grounded with him. But I want to say this, that I just tell people on the shows that I do with the family and even on other radio shows that we have to go back to the basics, the love of God. We must go back to the family. The family is the whole structure, and the enemy is deleting, destroying, and denouncing the family. And that's what's going on all across, not just with black people, but everybody. And so until we go back to the husband, the wife, which God is head of the husband and the husband head of the wife, we're not talking about boyfriend and girlfriend and biblical things. We're talking about biblical principles. And then the husband and wife can raise the children up the right way. And so until then, we won't be able to do what needs to be done because the principles of marriage and family is out of order. And until we get back in God's order, I believe that nothing would change. So if you women, that the dead and whomever, I would love to just give me some insight of what you think about that. I would love that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Darva. I appreciate that. I got a quick question for both of you all, because one thing that I see the culture changed after World War II when women were brought into the workforce to deal with the absent soldiers, you know, fighting the war. The culture changed. Women were out in the workforce. Women were getting educated. The dynamics of the culture changed, and nobody told the men the new rules. So now you have two people in a home, both of them wage earners, both of them functioning outside in the world. You didn't have that old traditional family of, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. So that means both people needed to parent, both people needed to have household management, household keeping, and child rearing skills to share those skills. Nobody told men the new rules about this. And so much of the conflict, much of the divorce had to do with women being independent, careers in their own right, men also working, men coming home wanting that wife to do the housework and all of that, and after she had done her 8 hours, it's like he did. So what I saw a generation ago is just a wave of divorces around just that issue, the fact that no one trained men to be partners in a family because they saw their fathers maybe being the ones that went out and worked and then the mother staying at home. Well, that economic, that social dynamic doesn't exist. And we never came up with a new rule book. So now we're the product of, you know, the change, the difference, and there's not the dominant submissive type relationship anymore, and no one taught men how to be partners in a relationship. And then when the dynamics really change, if the wife is the one that's earning and the husband has been laid off, then the power shifts, and a lot of men have frustration over that. So all of these things combine to create the situation that we have where households aren't getting along. So Darvin says we need to, you know, go back to the old values, but the old ways aren't going to go back because the world has changed. How do we raise our sons and daughters and prepare them for a new kind of relationship where there's co-parenting, co-responsibilities inside and outside of the house, mutual respect, and knowing how to compromise and organize your home and parent your children? How do we teach our children the new culture that now exists so that they can stay together?
I would like to go ahead. I thank you, Sister Darva, for even, you know, bringing that to us today. That value system is, if we don't value anything, then nothing is meaningful. And I go back to, we may not go back, Naima, to the way it used to be in that respect, but if our families, if there are any elders in that family, if those elders could at least take that mantle and talk about valuing religion or Christianity, whatever it is, you have to value that the spiritualness, you know, of righteousness. You've got to go there, and that is going to build that foundation, because if you have some values, some goals, and some principles of valuing education, if you're valuing family and what it means for a family in a dynamic to be able to worship together, to eat together, to cry together, all of those things, then I think our souls will be better and we'll begin to feel better about being compassionate enough about our mate so that we can do things in unison to make sure that we have that, you know, we're one. When you talk about marriage, now you're supposed to be one. That's what it says, and they take these vows, and it does say I'm going to be one, right? Not just two together make one, but you have to value something to build on mm-hmm. something. and make that be it. We know about Black history, but and Black history talks about how families back in the day when we were in slavery, how we were resourceful, how we did things to make sure that our families ate, we made sure that our families were okay, protected, all of that. That's not gone. We just don't know how to do it anymore in a loving way. You know, and that's all we need to do is reteach our history of how to value and have a value system, incorporate a value system in our homes. That family value system is so important. If you don't have it, you're just existing out here. And disaster. So that's my
step on that one.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yes, ma'am. I totally agree with everything you just said. And, you know, again, you know, because of the non-activity of just the relationship with our Creator as well, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like you said, if the spiritual side of understanding who God is and teaching it from the youngest down to 3 years old all the way, you know, until that child understands that it's a relationship. It's not just going to church or hearing a pastor speak.
Right.
You need to have a relationship with your Creator and, you know, and your higher power. And the goal is once the relationship is intact, it then gives a person a balance. And that's what you said, our souls are then transformed. We get that balance. We get what we need, you know, out of life where we become knowing instead of just doing, okay? You know something, and you'll be able to discern because our children are very wise. They're not just wise academically, but they're very wise because the Word of God clearly says, you know what I'm saying, you know, they're wiser but weaker, okay? What that means is that it is the mental capacities of the understanding and comprehension of life that they don't know. And we as, you know, the body of Christ or wherever you find yourself at in the specific goal of just say the worship, you know, of God, you should be able to effectively teach your children what it means to have balance. And I think that's what happens. Balance emotionally, balance mentally, balance physically, and balance spiritually. And there is a process for that because you know as well as I know, Dr. Green, that, you know, the mental mind or the mental brain, the capacities of logic, reasoning, and rationale is not even developed until they're 24 years old. So what's happening? Our children are learning by osmosis, our environmental. The environments that we have our children, they are absorbing all of it, all the toxicity of those environments. So when those toxics go inward, they create some type of dysfunction as well as turbulence within them. And then that's where the mind, which is no logic, that the emotional side, I'm just feeling. That's all I know do is feel. So the parents are looking at, well, why can't you do this and this and this? They don't even have the same logic as you. Even some of the parents are traumatized and don't have their logic and rationale and reasoning in place.
Man.
You know what I'm saying? So now you have the dysfunction helping the defective and producing more dysfunction. And I think that's what's happening, you know, from the plateau, what I see with these eyes every day. And I totally think that we need to, as a community, as a society, to actually hold workshops, seminars, conferences, teaching for parents and nuclear families. How do you, you know what I'm saying, rear your child? Because we raise corn in a field. Okay, so you have to rear your child.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I raise corn in the field.
You raise corn. You rear children.
We get all the time. I raise my child. I said, no, did you rear your child? If you raised your child, that means you made a mistake.
Mm.
Because now you are looking at it from a whole other perspective. And this is just something that's been said years and years. You know, we heard it as children. You know, I raised y'all the best I could, you know. I'm like, okay. But the thing about this is, you know what I'm saying, the dynamic of the mental, again, capacities of a person or people that are around in that the environment, they don't have a clue. That little Bobby, you know what I'm saying, little John John was sitting there watching as his uncle was over in the corner constantly smoking and drinking every day, raised in H-E-L-L, okay? And then mama was over here, you know what I'm saying, screaming at daddy. And then my sister over here picking at me, and I'm so tired of her, and nobody sees it. I feel overwhelmed.
Right. Then nobody sees it. We got to take another break.
I don't even know how to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to take another break.
Right.
Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we got a couple more callers on the line. And if you're listening online, want to chime in, got questions or comments for Dr. Debbie or Dr. Twin Green. And we will be right back after this quick break. So we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. Be back in a moment.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African-Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African-American Psychic Trauma.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves. But I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Debbie Green or Dr. Twin Green.
Well, hallelujah. Greetings, Global Transformers. This is Mama D in Chicago. How are you today? Grand Rising.
Grand Rising.
Yeah.
Hey.
No, you can't get away from the train up a child in the way that they should go. And when they are old, they will not depart from it. They'll have something to fall back on. And I think what's happening today is, number one, there's nobody there to train them up when 80%, or no, I think it was 75% of NAA families, Indigenous Native American African families, are headed by females who work outside the home. And there's no father in the home. And the grandparents are somewhere in senior citizen homes. So that's something that we have to cope with. But Naima, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said the man didn't get the memo. After the war, your wife needs a partner because she's now working outside the home. The master and slave relationship is over. I remember when husband number one, I say that because I've had four, my philosophy, just because one man made you cry does not mean you should never laugh again.
Hold on just one second. I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button on my computer.
Okay, well, number one.
Mama D was saying.
That's
all right.
She's still on there?
Yes. She was making the point that she said I hit the nail on the head saying men didn't get the memo, when the relationship changed.
They didn't get the memo. Your wife needs a partner when she works outside the home. Now, the master and slave relationship is over. I remember when husband number one, I say that because I've had four. My philosophy is just because one man made you cry does not mean you should never laugh again. So, anyway, number one told me, I washed the dishes for you. You know what I said to him? I said, no, you didn't wash the dishes for me. You washed the dishes because they're nasty. And you mess up more dishes than I do because I can use the same glass over and over again. Every time you come into the kitchen, you use a different glass. And if I get home first, I start dinner. You get home first, you start dinner. Even today, our young men say, she can't cook. They got this image in their head that they are still above the woman. They are, because that first relationship is not straight. We come into this world on a lie foot. My birth. No, it's not your birth. Your mama did the birthing. Your mama did the labor. Your mama did the work. You got born, and what's more, you were alive inside of her body for 9 months before she did the labor, did the work, did the birthing, so you could be born on the earth. So we've got to go back and revisit that, that you are a woman. You're the first teacher. If you were teaching correctly, your son wouldn't grow up and enslave you. Your son wouldn't grow up and think he's better than you. So we've got a lot of issues to deal with, but it's getting that first relationship straight. Earth Day, birthday. Men try, and women too, they try all kinds of ways to avoid that. They'll say, it's my born day. No, you miss it. You miss it. You didn't say, give credit to both. Earth Day, birthday, give credit to both. Well, it's my navel day. Oh, you miss it. You didn't give credit to both. Earth Day, birthday, credit to both. Well, it's my navel day. Oh, you miss it. Anything. I know the process of change is hard, but change is the only consistent thing in life. You change before you get born. You change after you die. But we don't.
Well, Mama D, Mama D, the point that you brought up, of course, these are two professional women, and as you point out, there's a whole different dynamic when you got two people working full time, and there's the old expectation that the wife is the one that's supposed to handle all the housework. And are we not raising our sons to prepare them for that equal partnership that they didn't see generations past? And is that the source of conflict? Thank you for bringing that point, Mama D. So let me see if Dr. Debbie and Dr. Twin have a thought on that, because they both have, you know, very strenuous careers, and these are issues that come up. So what would you say about that?
Go first, Dr. Twin. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm aware. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you, Mama D. Okay.
No problem.
Okay.
Don't talk all at once now.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Okay, so, yes, ma'am. Mama D, I think you are the wisest black woman in the world today. I listened to you on WDON, and one of these days it will be my pleasure to sit at your feet.
Oh, hey now. See, Mama D, you got another back. I told you were a celebrity, Mama D.
I have some learning still to do, and a wise woman is the best educator for any professional black woman today. And so I applaud you for, you know, you're always giving sound advice whenever I've listened to you, and I appreciate you. And no, we have not trained our young men, our sons, to be the men in a relationship that they should be. And I know that I fall short there, because I had one son, and I did not raise him. If I had had the opportunity, because he was all over the place, if I had had the opportunity, I don't know if I would have really put that much emphasis on it, because I was working and, you know, just doing, and he saw me doing, you know, coming home and cooking and doing all those things, because my mother was not a mother that stayed at home. She worked just like my father, but they came from the South. And the expectation was that my mother cooked the meals every day, whether she worked or did not work. She cooked those meals. And my father worked for the railroad, worked hard, but she made sure that she did all of the cooking. We had our chores, but she did all of the cooking, and it was expected of her to do that. And me, as a young woman, a young girl watching that, I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. But now I'm in my own professional world, and I have my household. I don't want to come home and have to do all of that. So I resisted, you know. But I watched my mother do it,
yeah.
And I thought it was the norm. Mm-hmm. But Mama D said, when you come in, whoever gets in the get home first, mm-hmm. you should be doing this stuff. And you are so right, because my man does the same thing with these glasses. He will, every time you turn around, he's got another glass. And I wash the dishes for you, or I put the you know, I start to load a laundry for you. It's always for you. No, you
it's
are
my
right.
job.
You know, you have the laundry basket has yours and mine in it. You know, so that just tickled me when Mama was saying that. But yeah, we've missed the mark. We've missed that mark right there of raising our sons. You know, to be those men that we would want them to be, a good man, to be a, you know, equally valued in all of those domestic situations in their home. And that is why, you know, it's so challenging right now, and expectation is always the woman should do this, the woman should do that. That's your job to do this, and this is your job to do that, and it is not. It is not. And it causes conflict in the home a lot of times when, you know, you start to say, well, I, you know, why can't you? Then that just, it's just a whole nother, an unnecessary argument about something. But if you come into that relationship with that expectation, then you won't, those conflicts won't be blow-ups and become physical in some respects. But I'm gonna yield to my sister, Dr. Debbie.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that yeah, it was, I love her because since being with the Female Solution, she is so wise, and my heart just goes out to her. I'm so thankful just to be in her time. You know, as you said, you know, raising our young men, you know what I'm saying, from the earliest when my son, because I have one son, but I have also two daughters, but one boy. So I would always tell them, I said, okay, after you eat, you need to put your, you know, plate in the dishwasher, you know, put all this thing, and take care of it. You see what I'm saying? And I think that's when families are doing that. They wait for somebody to fix it off the table. Does they stand? If they can stand, oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you were kind of blinking in and out a little bit. Yeah, you might want
to
make sure.
Me?
Yeah, we can hear you. You want to make sure.
Oh, yeah, that's
just. Yeah, you want to make sure you close all any other windows on your computer
okay.
So it's not sucking out your internet. Yeah, because you were just kind of blinking out just a little bit, but we can hear you.
Okay. All right. So the goal is to again let them have their independence from a young age. And you will know if they had that from a young age, because the man that you get involved with, or even your husband, or you're still dating, or whatever the case may be, when they actually come into your home, if you invite them there, okay, worthy, they come into your home, you know, they'll say, hey, let me wash the dishes. I think that you cook the meals, so let me wash the dishes, you know what I'm saying? It's always something that will let you know whether that person had good home training. You know, my mother used to always tell me, a man that comes to your door empty-handed, you better check him. He said he should come in with something.
Okay.
He should come, I don't care if it's a loaf of bread. Just tell him, don't come to my house. And and then you say, I mean, because this is just reality. This is the old way. But I know the new age way of things, you know, and women are tending to be a little more lenient in those areas. It depends on how they were reared, okay? Now, I was kind of reared, you know, in different fashions, and I believe, you know, I should cook the meal, but if there's a male counterpart there, hey, come on over here and prep this over here. Because yes, we are cooking this meal together.
Yeah.
Together. And I mean, and if they find a problem with that, they just want to sit on the couch and, you know, and just wait for me all the time, I don't know. Know about that, y'all. That person. But I'm just saying, that's just my opinion with that. But the fabric of life is togetherness. So I think that was the main core of this topic.
Hey, you know what? I want to
can we all get along?
I want to share something. I think it just came to mind, and it was quite funny as I reflect back on when I was coming up. You know, my mother she taught all of us how to cook. Boys too, because if he, you know, she used to tell her boys, you know, and just in case you know, got you a wonderful wife that could not cook to your satisfaction or cook, you know,
the meals
boys
you
expect,
like, yeah.
You know, to taste their mama's cooking and the wife that they get, right? So she would train them how to prepare certain things so that if they were alone, they wouldn't starve. They would know how to cook a good meal.
Yeah, that's a survival skill.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did that for my son.
Yeah.
But the thing that got me was how my mother used to make our plates from the stove. And we would, you know, and place it on the table and we'd eat. My father, by him working, you know, the railroad, and he would get home later, he would sit at the table, at the head of the table. She would take each and every dish that she prepared and put it in a separate dish and put it on the table, buffet style, for him. And that's how he ate.
That's interesting.
That's how he ate. And then we had to wash all those dishes.
Oh, wow. Our daughters, what a relationship looks like.
Yeah, we missed the mark there.
Yeah. Well, let me see if we've got, I think we've got some other callers on the line that have pressed one. Yes, area code 312-671. Your mic is open. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question for Dr. Debbie and Dr. Twin. Go right ahead.
We on Yashalom. Ahura, we don't die, we multiply. Black power forever, and black is beautiful as you are, Dr. Debbie Green, and I salute the female solution, and especially you, Sister Naima Lutis. This is Minister Plump, your brother and friend, lifetime, too, forever.
Absolutely.
I thank you very much for, you know, last Friday, which was a 23-day, you know,
congratulations for being honored for all your excellent work. You know, we really value the wisdom of people calling yourself and Mama D, who share your wisdom of your senior years, and we so desperately need that. Let me ask you this question. You know, you've been a married man and, of course, have lived through an era. You've got daughters. What do you tell them?
I have two daughters.
From men in their lives, and what kind of relationship do you tell them that they should look for in a young man?
Hallelujah. Yes, thank you. I seen my parents be the 50-plus years. I've even seen my baby sister be the 50-plus years. And even myself, I made 30-plus years. And, you know, a very important spiritual thing is, you know, God don't make no mistakes. Got two greens on the program, which means life. And I thank both of them doctors, a twin, two green. You know, we're in it to win. Yeah, you know. And Sister Dava Watkins, Apostle Dava Watkins, you know, see, when I see this is what everything that God created, he created in pairs. He didn't create nothing in, you know, one of this or one of that, you know, and I just want to say this, going to be God's will only. We got to go back to the God's will, and God's will is for the family to get married, men and women to get married, and I will marry them up when they get ready to get married. God bless each and every family, and we need to know that family is just like God. And who is God? God is number one. And who else is God? God is you. You know, he always, in this word, to say, none but the pure in the heart and the righteous is going to see God. So a man must protect his family. That's the order of God. A man must provide for his family. A man must do unity in the family. And, you know, back in the day, we had respect, and respect is everything. We had black and black love. We used to love each other. And the problem came when we fell out of love with God and each other. But I just want to mention that information is the key to success. So we can breed success. And it takes a village to raise one child, and no one can raise a kid. We have to abolish that word kid out of our
vocabulary.
Thank you so much, there, sister. You know, that was a problem I had, too, coming up. Sometimes I would get tie-tongued. You know, I have to laugh at my faults, my shortcomings, and my follies. You know, as a human being, everybody, no matter what race they in, no matter what their sex is, there's a number that goes with that, and that's 29. You know, I learned that a human being means 29. Everybody got a temple, and everybody can control their temple, which is inside of you. And the way you do it is you help stop the violence, robbing, stealing, and killing, and the hijacking. And remember that Bebe, Ray Ray, She Ray, and Shay Nay children, those are Minister Plop children. They're my children. But I need all the help in the world because it is a mission that we are on, and I'm with Apostle Dava Watkins, men on a mission and women on a mission, and I want to compliment you all for being those women. The Female Solution is the world's greatest blog radio station in the nation, and everybody should listen to this show because it is a way of life that we can all serve Yahshua, who most know as Jesus Christ, and it can be in a way that we can do what we got to do. For more information, go to the HaleWashingtonFoundation.info, or people can call me direct at 312.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
And we want to make sure that we spread your message here and abroad, because you are definitely someone that is sharing wisdom, love, and light. So we appreciate you so much. We're going to take our last break. And if you're on our switchboard now and got a comment to make, please press 1, light your number up, and let us know you have something to say. And we'll be back with Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green and our guest, Dr. Twin Green. And we want to hear from you. So if you want a visual, you can go to Soulful Solutions on Facebook and YouTube and write in your comments. I think we had a couple of comments that passed by. So we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on Cable TV Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
right. Welcome back. Welcome back. We are at the top of our hour. Welcome back to Soulful Solutions. My name is Dr. Debbie Green with my wonderful co-host, Naomi Latif, our executive producer, and our wonderful guest, Dr. Twin Green with Link and Option Center. All right. And that's out of Chi-Town. Where it's cold. Oh, it's so cold. Oh, my goodness. I could have been, y'all are used to that. See, that's why God blessed me in this wonderful climate, because I don't know. But I would love, I've visited there before. It's a beautiful place, by the way. It is beautiful. So before we take the last call, I'm just any more calling. It does. Y'all used to that. That's amazing. I give y'all the props. I want to know one thing too. Where do you see your future plans are going, Dr. Green? Where with your organization, your business, and your the community effort that you are then, you know, being a part of, what do you see this evolving to? Like, is there any future plans you have, you know, to help the families?
Well, my...
Because I want to be a part of that.
You want to be a part of it. I want you to.
Yes, ma'am.
You know...
yes, ma'am.
The healthcare industry marketplace is huge. And I think what I'm looking at is I serve more people in the South Suburban Cook County area, which you're unfamiliar with how the geography is, but we're right next door to Chicago. Just like 2 minutes, you're in the city limits of Chicago, so we're close. We're not way out. But I service Chicago and residents in Chicago and as well as the South Suburban Cook County area. But the resources in the Southland, the South Suburban Cook County area, Southland is what you call it, are unequal to the city of Chicago. Less providers, population is great, it's huge, need is huge. And my goal is just to bring more resources into the South Cook County area and build more service delivery systems for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's not about the black and brown. It's just, you know, everyone that's in need should have it. And expanding the agency to be bigger and to be able to have the capacity to serve more and be a hub for all systems, healthcare systems, in a coordinated fashion, that we know that we're taking care of the people that are most in need, because it isn't going away. So we, you know, this is my expertise, and I want to make it bigger and better in every aspect of the way that I possibly can. So that's my goal. It's just to keep building on the foundation that I already have for 29 years and be able to serve more people with sustainable resources. And that's why I don't chase grants. You know, it's just, you know, I want to be able to make sure that people know that this agency is in this place for my need, to service my need. So what it looks like, that's what it is.
Absolutely. You know, we really do, I mean, we do have different resources here in the Atlanta area, but when you just from talking with you thus far this morning, I truly believe that there definitely needs to be an extension here in the inner city. In the inner city, there is no, in the inner city of Atlanta, there is no real, I would say, resource that is what you're describing. I can definitely see the compassion. And I'm sure they have organizations there that are, you know, showing or doing something. But this is different. And, I mean, mean, I know different organizations down in the city of corridors, you know, like down to, that's the inner city. I'm talking about to the areas of the, you know, the poor, low economical areas, that if your child is subject to a situation, whatever it is, you know, family, environmental, financial, whatever, you know, saying there's not a lot of resources there for them.
No.
And like you say, it doesn't matter the color or whatever the case is, but we do know, because our populations in the inner cities, in certain boroughs, you know what I'm saying, are more minority than they are Caucasian, you know what I'm saying? So there's no Asian race there, okay? Caucasian race may be minimum. You know, you may see more Hispanic either the Black American, you know, families. Those are the families that have been really, truly neglected over periods of time, if I can say that candidly, because I see that myself every day.
Yeah.
So the communities that are there, the recreational, the organizations or whatever, churches or whatever the case may be, still don't have the components of change.
Yeah.
It's not effective enough. Something's not working, because you can still, you know, when you look at the criminal or the crime statistics on this,
mm-hmm.
that's your answer. When you see a mother and a father get in an altercation, father picks up the gun, kills the mother, then kills his children, then kills himself. I call it murdercide.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
murder-side.
What it is.
Murdercide. Yeah. Yeah.
It's murdercide. So this is what my focus on. I have a program under the Journey Life Ministries, because that's my tax-exempt, tax-exempt number of a most at 501(c). But underneath that is Keys for Freedom, Inc. Keys for Freedom, Inc. And it's a program focusing on domestic family violence that individuals and families that have been affected. But somewhere all over the nation, children are suffering because of a parent that's been murdered by another parent, or had committed suicide, or families have been affected because the mother and the father, you know, were affected by murder, and then the children also end up being murdered. Now the families, the outer corridors of those families are affected. So what's the answer? You know what I'm saying? How do we as a people really come to a very, very epidemic, that I call it, because that's what it is. It's an epidemic. Since 2020, like I said, the veil was pulled off. So whatever defective, whatever dysfunctional, whatever it was that was hidden is now no longer hidden at all. And it has festered. It's toxic to our children and our youth, and it is what it is.
And you know, I will share one thing. I stay in my mental health lane so much that I think I forget about the other things that I am doing, and I would like to just share this with you, Dr. Green. Naima was actually there, and to your listeners as well. On February the 1st, we and my organization and Dr. DJ Prabhaka, who is actually the president of the new Gandhi King Center for Nonviolence, just launched it, its opening of that initiative in the community of Inglewood is where it's going to be centered. And Inglewood is one of the most devastated communities, impoverished communities in the city of Chicago. And we are trying to help those residents in that community to breathe again. And I'm pointing that because that is so important, that the resources, we're breathing resources back into that community, because they are
It's gang infested.
Yes.
And it is, you know, it needs a lot of resources and attention. It's unbelievable. And I was reared, I'm not going to say raised, I was reared up until age 3 in that community. And then my father moved us out of the Inglewood community because he saw at that time in 1962 that the gangs were going to take over. And his teenage sons, he did not want them to get caught up in it. And he moved us, the entire family. And, you know, for the better, into another community, Morgan Park, thriving community new. But just to say this, this is something that the new Gandhi King Center for Nonviolence is going to be something for everyone to look at and want to be a part of. So I will definitely keep you informed as we, you know, keep moving and making this.
Please.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be doing some great things. Great things. Right in the community.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, we're supposed to connect. This was not a happenstance or just a coincidence. Because the need is so great. It really is. And again, as I always say to myself, when I go in to talk to my patients or clients or what have you, I said, if I could save one life, I've done my job.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I could save just one,
that's what
I've done
saying.
My job. Yeah. I can go home and lay my head on the pillow. That's what he said, right?
That's
Jesus
right.
Said, that's all he wanted to do was save one. If I save one, I've done my job.
Yeah,
we may not can save everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't expect to.
Start with that one and then.
We can blow hard, right?
Yeah.
I've done my job. I feel good about that. The family comes back to the facility and says, thank you. Just thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for helping us because we didn't know what to do.
You know, I got a question.
We didn't know about we had to give up the child and the child go into the system.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I got... The child will go into the system. Don't you know it's to the point where they don't know what to do anymore? They bring them to mental health hospitals,
and they
literally tell the social service he can't anymore.
Yeah,
you find a place for him.
I can't do
nothing. Because we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
We've been doing it for 5 years, and he's been in and out, constantly, and it could be a point where they're so bad that they can't go, they can't sleep because they think she's going to commit suicide. It's to the point, and the inpatient stays, when you see a child, and I just want to say this real quick, Manny, when you see a child from ages 6 all the way to 15, and they had 9 and 10 inpatient stays.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm talking about 9 and 10.
That's what we're saying.
Admittance and staying in there. This is when you know this is a big problem, and that family says, I can't do this anymore. Could you find a place for them? Don't want to go call the Department of Children, whatever, do whatever you want to do.
Yes.
I can't do this anymore. They need residential care. They have into the system to take custody until it's 18 years old. It gets passes off the family, and God forbid them to get more traumatized.
Yeah,
it's reality.
We have that same dynamic here, Dr. Debbie, and all of most of the parents that are bringing their children to us are always asking to see the psychiatrist because they want to get them medicated.
Mm.
And so we prescribe medication. We don't administer it, except for those that have, the adult populations that have a disorder of schizophrenia. But if, you know, so medication, they think that is the it and all. That is the savior. Give them some psychotropic medication, and everything is going to be okay. And that's 4-year-olds. Remember I told you I had 4. They want to manage. The parents cannot handle it. This pandemic has really Naeem, I know you wanted to say something, but I just had to.
Well, you know when you mentioned the gang situation, you know, and that being something your parents saw, okay, we got to get out of here. But what I've learned from my students who, you know, let me know, yeah, we're in a gang, and here, let me show you a handshake. I mean, you know, they are looking for a family to belong to with a strong male image that they can emulate, because they don't have that once the father is missing from their lives. So the structure that they find is one of, you know, a sense of brotherhood that they may not be getting at home for whatever reasons, you know, when families break apart, the feeling of support, the camaraderie, belongingness, purpose, strength, empowerment, all of that they get by belonging to a group of men that financially support them with an enterprise. So I understand very much the strong draw that that has for our young men. And when we don't have an alternative, and we say, oh, your gangs are bad, get out of gangs, and, you know, you go to jail. Well, in the jail, they are still flourishing because it's still that structure that men need. They need a brotherhood. They need camaraderie. They need the feeling of belongingness. They need a feeling of power. So us attacking gangs doesn't attack the problem. We're attacking the symptom of a problem, which is a feeling of isolation and no belongingness and no family.
Being boxed in.
Yes. So do you see a way that the mental health community can work with people? We can not see anybody as the enemy, but see all of us as human beings who are trying to fulfill human needs, even with those street organizations. Yes, they may be doing things illegal, dangerous, violent, but they're all human beings that are trying to fulfill a need. Is there a way at some point to heal the hurt, even in the most notorious gang leaders, so that what they do can still be done in a valuable, constructive way, the way many street organizations were first formed, as a means to create an organization of unity in the community.
Right.
Now, of course, it's been used for drug trafficking and weapons trafficking and all of that, but the social and emotional support factor is there and needed. So is there a way we can all work together for the good, even though we are seeing the negative consequences of what has happened? But can we involve all human beings in this healing process? Is there a way to do that?
I don't have an answer.
That's a hard one.
I don't have an answer.
That's a hard one.
The leaders are not the leaders of before. The
right.
Gang leaders are not the leaders before. And this generation of gang leaders right now, they're playing from a different playbook,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
that foundation of consciousness is not there.
That consciousness is not there, and old heads used to be able to control things, and safety was not that much of an issue for the average person to walk the street. You know,
mm-hmm.
if we're interrupting something, then that's a different situation. But now it's out of control. I don't know what that answer is, but we have got to, you know, we've got to do something. And I think I've learned a lot this past week from some organizations that actually work in the Englewood community, trying to make the community safe to just pump gas at the gas station.
Yeah.
That's how serious it is, you know. So, you know, the conversations just has to keep, you know, happening, you know, and getting to the right people that can get to the right people that can get to the right people and see what conversations can start. Because I don't know.
I mean, there are people who are able to work with those who are in the streets creating the problem.
Yeah.
And everybody is a soul. Everybody's a soul on a journey, even if they're going through the worst part of their journey, even if that journey is carjacking and sticking up people, something inside of them is still the power of God that has to be reached. And if we can touch the soul that has been led astray and is going astray and is creating the problem, and we can bring them back to themselves, then we can solve the problem. And I think that because every soul is redeemable, we can make that happen. That's my thought. If we can connect with those people, if we can connect our mental health people with those people,
right,
we can make that happen.
Can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so we got about 3 more minutes, so we will make sure that twins go ahead and say her piece. But let me tell you something about what y'all got. It's only going to take me 1 minute and 2 seconds speech. What's happening is, we have fell away of God, number one. Number two is that because of the toxicity in the minds of God's people have actually been erupted and corrupted. Number three, until we go back to the foundations of understanding and comprehension of what life is supposed to be, which is lessons, instructions for eternity, then we're not going to get the bigger picture at all. We're just going to continue to self-defeat, self-sabotage, and self-destruct. And that's what some people, this is what they do normally. That's what you're talking about, gang members. This is what they do every single day because they've been, it's ingrained subconsciously, it's ingrained consciously. They have no self-awareness. They have no emotional availability. All of that has ceased. It's wonderful to say, wish I can help them. I have those. The communities have to get in point, become more aware and create a place of safety for the children. Because if you're doing it for children, you're not doing it for the elders, then it's not being done at all.
Yeah.
That's what our Gandhi King Center for
Nonprofits
going to be focusing on, Naima, a whole lot. So that, you know, that's the start.
And how do people get in touch with the Gandhi King Center for Nonprofits?
Thank you. I'm sorry, something happened. I couldn't hear you.
How do people get in touch with the Gandhi King Center for Nonviolence?
I will give you that information. It's an email for Dr. BJ Prabhaka. I can share his phone number that will help for now.
Yes, if people want to call and say, can I bring my
phone? Yeah, people want to call and say, but while I'm looking for that number in my phone, what I'd like to say is I have truly enjoyed being on the show today, and I look forward to an invitation to come back. Dr. BJ's number is area code 773-865-1722. And so let him know that you would like to learn more about the Gandhi King Center for Nonviolence and how you'd like to be a part, support, and be a resource to it.
I am so excited. I have not had
much sleep last night because I was excited about being on the show today and with my sisters, Dr. Debbie Clayton and Naima, and we went to grammar school together, and I mean, we have reconnected. And so the mental health.
Yes, he is.
We're
going to definitely forget.
Yes. Well, we thank you so much for being with us,
ma'am.
And
that's
we will be inviting you back.
end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our book, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Dziękuję, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Medasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jerez, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.